Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
If it's got that low down, minor key, haunting sound, it's probably Cab Calloway and his band. He had just an amazing band in the 30s. What did Calloway himself do? Well, he sang, he danced, he pulled the band together with a firm code of ethics.
They used to call him the General.
Calloway's grandson, C. Calloway Brooks, remembers his grandfather's rules for musicians.
You should always be early. You should always be impeccably and stylishly dressed. You should always treat people with respect while making your own position and your needs clear.
Whatever it was, it paid off. Dizzy Gillespie was in the band for a time, and the drummer Cozy Cole, and the bassist Milt Hinton, and the tall, thin, polished Calloway, in white silk tails trimmed in silver, led the way.
I mean, he really knew how to get the best out of a jazz orchestra.
Pop music and jazz writer Will Friedwald.
He could take a band that, you know, sounded okay before him, and after he finished with it, they sounded great. I mean, even if he had never sung, that would have been more than sufficient. However, he did also sing, and he was a wonderful, extravagant vocalist and one of the most flamboyant entertainers of the big band era.
It was the extravagance and flamboyance that made Calloway rich and famous in the darkest days of the Great Depression. He slid and shimmied and wailed through his signature song, Minnie the Moocher, at the Cotton Club, back to that haunting minor key sound.
Folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red-hot hoochie-coocher.
Never mind the song's drug imagery. Many people barely even noticed the lyrics were about the coked-up hallucinations of Minnie and Smokey Joe. What they did notice were the Heidi Heidi Hoes. Calloway claimed he forgot the lyrics to Minnie one day and just came out with whatever nonsense words came to mind. It was those simple syllables that stuck, and it was the way audiences got into it, mimicking his phrases, the call and response.
The whole idea of call and response is a major component of jazz in general. One player will try to play something and lose the other guy. I'll try to play something more complex and interesting, and the other guy won't be able to top it. And Calloway does that too. Just the very act of somebody singing back and forth is always certain to evoke Cab Calloway.
Cabell Calloway had been born in Rochester, New York, Christmas Day, 1907. His parents, a lawyer and a public school teacher, wanted him to study law. Calloway was more of a music guy, starting with voice lessons at 14. In his autobiography, he describes being taught to sing a scale while holding his tongue down with a handkerchief until he could sing as well with his tongue tied as most people could normally. Not surprisingly, one of his later trademarks was a tongue-twistingly syllabic style that was beyond belief. Gunther Schuller, in his History of Jazz, called Calloway a magnificent singer, quite definitely the most unusually and broadly gifted male singer of the 30s.
When you're smiling, keep on smiling. The whole world will smile with you.
But Calloway's influence went way beyond music. In fact, going beyond, that's what he was about. There was his appearance. He took the zoot suit to its absolute multicultural end.
A cotton picker's slave hat on the top with a really wide brim. You have a long jacket like Rhett Butler would wear in Gone with the Wind. There's a German watch with a long watch chain on it. And you've got the Hispanic parachute pants that Granddad got from Cuba. And you've got the two-tone British dress shoes. And you got the Chinese silk tie.
He always looked smooth and fashionably ahead of the curve, and he always sounded electric. Calloway also adored the language of jazz and jive and pushed that as far as it could go. He published a dictionary of Hepster slang in 1938 that became the standard source for decades. It was part of what Calloway called his swing formation bureau, pointing out, for example, that high register trumpet notes were called Armstrongs. And you never said teeth. The Hepster slang for teeth was crumb crushers.
Let me dig that jive once more.
So with all that, it's a surprise to discover that Cab Calloway, his highness of Heidi Ho, was a very shy, retiring guy. That on-stage thing was a creation.
It was a persona, and that's how he dealt. You know, many artists have this trouble of how to deal with the world outside of one's artistic domain, and there are all different ways of wrestling with it. The way that he did it, he sort of kept them distinct. It was almost like he was saving and conserving his energy and very, very minimalistic when he was off stage. Very few words, very, very reserved. He could turn it on and off like a switch. It's amazing.
It's about bigness. It's way over the top. It's grand. It's grandiose. It's excessive.
It's true. Some music is prized for its subtlety, not Calloway's. Coming from him, it's the absence of nuance we love, and it made his name.
He was the man who broke the color barrier in the record industry. Minnie the Moocher was the first number one hit and the first million seller that was penned and performed by an African American. Before Duke Ellington, before Louis Armstrong.
Cab Calloway knew the secret. Sure, less is more sometimes. But the shy, modest guy they called the General knew that more can also be more. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.